This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
You are listening to the El Clasico Barcelona and Real Madrid fan show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, every Friday night, giving you a dose of the two heavyweights in La Liga, the latest on Barcelona and Real Madrid, both getting an equal share on the Love Sport stage. We will talk Real Madrid, who are up first, but you can be part of the show tonight and get involved by tweeting at Love Sport Radio or calling us on 0208 70 20 558. But it is the turn of Real Madrid. And to give us the lowdown of what is going on at the Bernabeu, who better than to join us other than Matt Wiltsey from Managing Madrid. Matt, thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. It's a real pleasure to have you on. Things have been going well in terms of the league form. They're top, but it's an indifferent Champions League form, isn't it? You know, they had to make a comeback against Club Brugge. Before that, let's take a look at that 0-0 draw in the Madrid derby. What did you make of that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, you know those derbies. They're constantly kind of tightly contested battles. So 0-0 wasn't a surprise. I think given the quality of chances Madrid had, it was a little bit disappointing for them not to come away with at least one goal. But it wasn't surprising, and it's not a disappointing result. We're still top of the league. But I think we're hoping that come this weekend against Granada, which is a top-of-the-table clash, believe it or not, we can come away with the 3 points at home.
Yeah, it's a massive clash on the weekend. Top-of-the-table, who would have thought that? But it is. We'll make our way to that in a little bit. Let's look at that Madrid derby. Always, you know, intense affairs. The two teams in Madrid, Atletico, very strong over the last few seasons. Don't concede a lot of goals, but this game could have been so different. Bale had a glorious chance, and this would have continued Real Madrid's strong form in the league, and yet they are still unbeaten. It was a good point, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it was almost a case of both teams not wanting to lose, not wanting to kind of give up that good credit and kind of euphoria they have to the start of the season. I think had Real Madrid won this game, it would have put them mentally, I think it would have helped them kind of come over the hump from where they were last season. I mean, you see it even when they go behind a goal or what happened midweek against Club Brugge. I mean, you saw mentally they're still very fragile. They're still kind of those flashbacks to last season. So had they come away with the win, it would have been huge for them. But a draw still, like you said, isn't a bad result. It still kind of keeps that good euphoria going, that good credit in the league. But it would have been great to come away with the 3 points.
It would have been massive to come away with those 3 points. Matt, why we can't seem to put our finger on it as Madrid fans. Why is the La Liga form so different to the European form in the Champions League at the minute? Unbeaten in La Liga, you know, and then we had to make a comeback against Club Brugge, two goals down to get the 2-2 result. It could have been three European defeats on the spin.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning to say the least. And I think, I mean, Zidane, we know, wanted to prioritize La Liga. Even during his first stint in charge, he mentioned that winning La Liga in the 2016-2017 season was his greatest achievement. And that's what he's most proud of. And it's been, I mean, just constant dominance by Barcelona over the past decade. And so we know Real Madrid really wants to kind of break that curse and really get some consistency in La Liga, but maybe now it's affecting them in the Champions League. Unfortunately, we can't have it both ways. And they've dug themselves a hole here, and they need to get themselves out, because it's concerning. They really need to find some results in the Champions League.
They certainly do. And, you know, they are a European heavyweight, not just a Spanish heavyweight. And you look at these results, no matter if the form has been indifferent, and it's utter shock. Maybe a team's coming to Real Madrid, they don't fear them anymore. They don't fear them at the Bernabeu. They're not intimidated. And, you know, Real Madrid from that game, all the possession, all the chances, but it's Club Brugge, you know, take a two-goal lead. They don't hold on. But Zidane said, even they were silly goals to give away, wasn't they?
Yeah, and I mean, if you looked at Real Madrid's system and kind of how they set up tactically in that game, there was far too much space in between the lines. And so it was every counterattack that Club Brugge got, they were in on goal. It easily could have been 2 or 3-0. Or I mean, it was 2-0, but could have been 3-0. by the end of the half. And so Real Madrid, they struggled despite, like you said, controlling possession, especially in the second half, kind of mounting that pressure. Despite that, they really didn't create too many quality chances from open play. And so that's what's concerning. Both goals came from kind of a set piece. Obviously, Casemiro's was a set piece. And then Ramos' goal was in open play, but it was almost from a corner kick. It was a corner kick-like play. And so that's a little concerning that despite all this possession, despite all this control, Real Madrid didn't do enough to kind of turn that around and create quality chances against Club Brugge. I mean, we're not talking about Barcelona and the Bernabeu. We're talking about Club Brugge. And so that is alarming and that is concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's no disrespect to Club Brugge, but this is Real Madrid. They should be beating these teams. Luckily, obviously, PSG in their group, Group A, are running away with it. They have a four-point cushion in two games already. Luckily, Club Brugge and Galatasaray are around. But that first spot, you know, you want to be the seeded one team, so you play an easier team, shall we say, a seeded two team. Are you worried now that that first spot is already out of reach for Real Madrid?
I am. I think it probably is. I think right now we've got to do everything we can just to get the second spot. And we saw last season after getting the second spot and what occurred. We took on Ajax and it hurt us. We out of the round of 16. That's a very real possibility once again. I mean, this team isn't quite as formidable as they were during Zidane's first era, where most of these guys were still in their peak. And it seems like the core of this team has now kind of started to hit their decline, and I think we need to start incorporating some of the younger players, give some fresh legs, give some fresh energy to this team, because you're starting to see it. You're starting to see teams figure it out, and you're starting to see that this core group, the Marcelos, the Modric, the Sergio Ramos, the Benzema, they're starting to decline just a little bit.
Well, hopefully a back-to-back doubleheader with Galatasaray now, they can get 6 points and make headway in that group. Another incident from the game, though, the goalkeeper, Courtois, saying he suffered an anxiety attack. Mac, do you know anything about that? Can you shed any light on that incident?
Yeah, so there's been some inconsistent reports on that, because Real Madrid actually came out this morning and denied those reports. But whatever it was, I mean, Courtois definitely didn't feel well during halftime. It wasn't a tactical switch or anything like that. He apparently lost 3 kilos during the match. Wow. And just had a stomach bug and nauseous and you name it. So, but I certainly think whether he has anxiety or not, I mean, I certainly think there's an immense amount of pressure on him. He's even talked about it, saying being the goalkeeper of Real Madrid is, you just have to deal with it. It's what comes with the job, but he's certainly under a lot of pressure. It's just, the fans haven't really been able to take to him yet, for whatever reason. Obviously, there's a lot of love for Keylor Navas. And so for
well,
him,
it's not just that. He played for the Madrid rivals, didn't he, Matt? So that, and that was
exactly
the game on the weekend.
Exactly.
That still hangs over them. The Real Madrid fans don't forget.
Exactly. And so he's got a lot of work. He came in after that great World Cup and Madrid fans were expecting big things, but it hasn't happened yet for him.
What about, let me ask, because one who's making headway in the Premier League over here, Matt, is Dani Ceballos. He's at Arsenal. You know, he got his first goal in Europe this week. Does he have a Real Madrid future? Is he one that can still make headway in Real Madrid? Or this is kind of the beginning of the end for him?
So most Real Madrid fans will tell you that he does. And we want to believe he does. I mean, it's funny. We have two loanees, Sergio Reguilon and Dani Ceballos, who are both part of the Spanish national team squad. So that in itself is just crazy to think about. But we believe Dani Ceballos has a chance, but whether Zidane does is a completely different item altogether. I mean, Zidane just doesn't seem to have the faith in him.
Well, maybe Arsenal fans will be praying Zidane stays around, because I can tell you he's already a fan's favourite at Arsenal. You know, he seems to have really gelled with the fans and get on at the club. But let's keep our attentions on Real Madrid, because it is Granada on the weekend. And like you said, Matt, it is a top of the table clash. Real Madrid are unbeaten. What are your thoughts going into this fixture?
This is huge. I think Real Madrid have to get the result, especially kind of build up that credit with the fans, get that good feeling back. We're at the Bernabeu, where we haven't had the greatest results, so they need to turn it around here. But again, we have to recognize how good Granada have been at the start of this season. They're a dangerous team, especially on the counter.
they are dangerous. They've won the same amount of games. They're going to be full of confidence. They've only lost one game, but they're unbeaten in the last five. Do you think Granada, when they face Real Madrid this weekend, they think, you know, we fancy our chances. Why can't we? You know, Real Madrid at the minute, especially from Europe, are a wounded animal. This is the best time to be facing them.
No, without a doubt. And they're going to go in. They're going to have a game plan. And so Madrid needs to be prepared. Zidane needs to do his homework. He needs to make sure that the team's set up in the right tactical formation. And like we talked about earlier, they need to make sure those lines, but space between those lines are tight. They can't allow teams just to kind of slide through that midfield. One pass breaks through our defense. I mean, we need to make sure that we're solid defensively, and then we can go from there.
And not only that, it's the last game before the international break. It's always important to go into those international breaks off the back of a win, isn't it, Matt?
Exactly, exactly. It's huge. It gives the team confidence. They go home or go back to their national teams kind of feeling less anxious and just ready to take on the next game once they come back. And so, yeah, it's huge. It's huge mentally, and we can't kind of discredit that psychological part of the game.
Also, when you look at it, you know, maybe you wouldn't have predicted Granada to be there, but you're playing the likes of Atletico Madrid, Barcelona, Seville, you know. When it is such a tight, tight title race, if you do slip up, say, to Granada on the weekend, Barcelona, only 1 or 2 points behind, you slip up and they're right in front of you and you have to chase early, don't you?
Yeah, and you don't want to be in a situation we were in the past just how many seasons where you come to February and Madrid's 7-10 points behind Barcelona. And so we had a 4-point lead, and obviously we lost some points heading into the weekend against Atletico Madrid. We lost some points, so they really need to make sure that they keep this lead strong.
They do need to keep the league strong. Well, it is Granada on the weekend. What is your score prediction, Matt?
I think
I'll
I'm going to go.
Spot.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with a crazy back and forth game, maybe a 3-2 to Real Madrid.
Would you take that? You'd accept that even though it's two goals conceded? You'd be happy with the 3 points. That's all that matters, Matt.
Exactly. Yes, I would. I would take the 3 points whichever way it comes.
Well, Matt, it was an absolute pleasure to have you. Matt Wiltsey joining us there to talk about Real Madrid on the El Clasico Barcelona Real Madrid fan show. It was Real Madrid's turn, but as always on Love Sport, we give everyone equal billing. And next, we'll have another very special guest. We'll be talking all about Barcelona.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the El Clasico Barcelona and Real Madrid fan show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. Every Friday night, this is the place to be for the Spanish heavyweights. Well, we just heard from Matt Wiltsey there talking everything about Real Madrid, but it's only fair, of course, now it is Barcelona's turn, and the man who is in the know, it is Mr. Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast. Dan, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. Before we talk about Barcelona's form in La Liga, we have to talk about that comeback to Inter Milan in the Champions League this week and the absolute sublime class from Luis Suarez.
Yeah, it is funny that I think this year there's a lack of nuance, should I say, actually, in how culés and Barcelona fans even celebrate results. I think going into that match, those might be forgotten that Inter this season, going all the way back to their treble years under Jose Mourinho, Inter are a much better squad this year than they've been in past seasons, right? And with how good Inter's been defensively, in particular, having given up only 3 goals so far this season before facing off against Barcelona, you know, it's almost surprising that when people look on paper, Barcelona should be a favorite in those games. But under Antonio Conte, you know, not that this is me coming on talking about Inter, but they had a game plan that it looked like Ernesto Valverde didn't meet. But in the second half, he got his substitutes right, and Luis Suarez came alive, and Messi, who's, you know, for those who aren't paying attention, had only played 2 45-minute halves before that Inter match when he played the full 90 minutes, and that's coming off another knock as well. And he winds up finding the game late on, and I think Barcelona, for all that they've been criticized so far this season, there are some things that I think represent themes that have happened throughout the season in that match, and yet in the same regard, you see things that you might just say were flash-of-a-pan moments. And I think Luis Suarez, you see that he is still so much class. And yet, if you didn't watch the match, you didn't see that maybe it wasn't really his best in terms of what he was able to help Barca do defensively or offensively in the build-up. And yet, we just are going to watch the highlights and see those two unbelievable goals, because that's what he still does and he's still capable of doing, just being a absolute class striker. And he scored two goals in a way that you'd expect that he's capable of doing.
Unbelievable goals. Dan, I've been criticising myself because I've just spent numerous hours re-watching those goals. Absolute class from them. But it's a very valid point you make, because Inter Milan are doing very well in Serie A this season. They're much improved under Conte. You know, they're really up for it this year. I think they're going to be a threat. And let's not forget, you know, Barcelona, I don't want to say the group of death, but it is a very tough group. Borussia Dortmund, Slavia Prague and Inter Milan. This is no gimme group, is it, Dan?
No, and I think that's, again, another argument that while Barcelona didn't play, they didn't play sparkling football against Dortmund in the first match day of the group stage, they still got the result. They still got the draw in Germany on the road. And when you look at the Champions League, that's what's important. It's important to just get your away fixtures, get the points there, and then take care of business at home. So to get the result against Dortmund, and that's another thing where Dortmund seems even stronger than they've been in previous seasons, and they have reinforced properly. For Barcelona, the reason why it truly does feel like a group of death is because at the times they faced them, it was number one in the Bundesliga and number one in Serie A. So I think it all comes into, and I know we're about to talk about La Liga too, but it's all about not underestimating the opponent while also recognizing some of the conflict that Barcelona is having in terms of gelling and getting everything to work on the field this season. And in the same regard, also understanding that Barcelona players and that squad is deeper than it's been in previous seasons, in my belief, and it's also a team that is generally more talented on paper than its opponent.
Well, Dan, it's a good point, because how impressed have you been with Barcelona then? Because how much does this highlight the class they have this year? Because you just said it there, Dortmund much improved, Inter Milan, and yet they are winning these games. And they're also showing a true strength of character to go behind in Inter Milan and come back, or not their best performance against Dortmund, and yet winning the games. They've not peaked yet. They're not in top gear, and they're still getting those points.
Yeah, certainly not. And I think for those who have watched them game in and game out, they have had some difficult performances this season, losing 2-0 to Granada. And even in some of the matches where they wind up getting a point, you look at the 2-2 against Osasuna, where they were down and that one had to come back. And then Barcelona, Villarreal, that 2-1 that also happened in the Liga this season, it was a world-class goal by Arthur and Santi Cazorla, who seems to be every neutral's favorite player in the Liga, which I agree. I'm so happy that Santi Cazorla and you in London know of his story.
You're not meant to have favorites, Dan.
What'd you say?
You're not meant to have favorites.
Well, that's just, I think he's, again, one of those players that always seems to fit what a Barcelona player is. Santi Cazorla, I mean, who never wound up suiting up for the Barcelona. But either way, then Antoine Griezmann getting a header goal in that Villarreal win as well. But again, Barcelona get 3 points. They beat Villarreal 2-1 in a midweek fixture. But if you didn't watch the full 90 minutes and you just watched the tremendous highlights, what you think, again, that Barcelona might have dominated or had this kind of performance. And yet it really was a performance that was full of malaise. They were having trouble in build-up. They really weren't creating much of anything other than those sparkling goals. And that has been one of the themes of Barcelona this season, that a lot of Kool-Aids. And that's why I want to go back to talking about nuance, that if you go on the internet and you go online, you go on Twitter and you go with where people are just hiding behind a keyboard, you see a different fan and a different conversation happening than those who might just be actually watching the matches, or those who might be thinking of things, not even more critically, but with an understanding that it's not gloom and doom and it's not fluffy rainbows, and it's somewhere in the middle. And that's the thing that we're watching right now with Barcelona, that they're just trying to put something together under what I think a lot of people believe in Ernesto Valverde probably shouldn't be there after what happened in Roma and then happened in Liverpool last season. Coming just with the Liga trophy last year, and as much as Barcelona have dominated the league over the last decade, there is an expectation that through the last few years of Messi, that something more is going to happen and be added to the trophy cabinet. And it seems like Ernesto Valverde has, a lot of fans have lost the faith in him, even if the dressing room and the board have not.
Dan, you mentioned there about, you know, people that say stuff behind their keyboard, and you're the man in the know for where Barcelona is concerned, and fans should check you out. You do the Barcelona podcast. But we do live in an age where now all fans can have their say in an instant. They can criticize players, they can praise players. How much do you think, and obviously we are talking Barcelona here, how much do you think it affects the players, you know, that outside noise? Because everyone now has their say. Can this affect a player's mentality, a team's mentality? You know, they know what's being said outside the camp.
Well, yeah, the two things I would add to that is, first and foremost, I think the way that we speak about mental health in the game is still changing and still evolving in positive directions. And I hope and that it would continue to happen. And for Barcelona, the big example has always been Boyan. Krejcik is the example from, you know, back in the day. He's now in the U.S. with Montreal Impact after being at Stoke City and all these different places. But, you know, he's been vocal about the struggles that he had at Barcelona. Same thing with Andre Gomes, who's now at Everton. He spoke about his mental illness, and there were a lot of positive responses to that, but in the same way, negative. And there's a reason why Andre Gomes is no longer at Barcelona for, again, a number of reasons, for his performances on the field, sure, but also things that the players chosen behind the scenes. So, I think the way we talk about mental illness is changing, and I hope it continues in positive directions, because you're right, mentality, and that's another thing that with La Masia, as a lot of teams across the world and a lot of squads with a lot of money have tried to replicate what La Masia did a decade ago, 15 years ago, the model and the way that coaches are as the modern game has changed, and coaches at a youth level have, we'll say, caught up to Barcelona and what they're teaching at La Masia, there's a special mentality that is supposed to continue to set La Masia players apart. And to my second point, when you look at a player, 16-year-old Ansu Fati, who just jumped on the scene, he was at the Juvenil Bay really level last year, and he was expected to be just a member of the Juvenil A team and maybe make his debut for Barcelona B. And now you look at him now, he's never played for Barca B yet, and yet he's a first-team player. And the prevailing, we'll say, hot and cold argument online is that this player really should be, you know, mentally throw his phone away, wrap him in bubble wrap, make sure that he's not too overwhelmed by all the positive stuff, because that's the problem with any major club. It's not just Barcelona. It's any global club that's got, you know, more than a million followers on social media. For all the positive you hear now, eventually he'll have a few performances that aren't so great because he's just a teenager, and that's okay. But yet the vitriol and the negativity that's going to come from that could sidetrack his career in, again, really negative ways. And, I think that the fact that – how do I say this? I think it comes down to each individual player. I think each individual player kind of has an idea of what they do. And that's why when there were leaders in the clubhouse, and they come from a different era in the likes of Puyol or Iniesta back in the day, you know that Puyol was a player that he would have eaten your phone if he had to protect some of the other players, to make sure they don't get involved in things. But I also think the media does play a hand, that certain players are covered differently than others, and in a negative way as well. I think sometimes the media can pick their favorites and can pick the ones that they want to be negative about.
Yeah, it's completely true. Fans are very fickle. You know, we praise you in a great performance. Then when it does go negative, regardless if you're a teenager, we start to pull it apart. Not the best. But let's turn our attentions to the game on the weekend, the last game before the international breakdown. And it is a huge game at home to Seville. Barcelona need to keep pace with Real Madrid, but they are in a tricky game. They play Granada this weekend, who actually beat Barcelona. But what do you make of the Barcelona-Seville game on the weekend, Dan?
Yeah, interesting, right? Because Lopetegui brought in so many of those reinforcements. And to my money, I think Joan Jordan has been their best player so far of all the guys that have been introduced to the team. And that's an interesting thing that you'd note, because, again, you think about the high-profile players that were brought in and a lot of youngsters as well to Sevilla. And it's a credit to Lopetegui. I thought that they would probably struggle out of the gate. But in the same way that the top half of the Liga table is helter-skelter chaos at the moment, where it seems like anybody can beat anybody. And the thinking would be that Barcelona at home at the Camp Nou, where they have been good so far this season, because you do look at their negative results this year, and it came against Bilbao to start the season. They lose 1-0, and Osasuna, that's the draw, and Granada, that's the loss. Those are the negative results this year where Barcelona didn't get the victory. So I would still expect, and you look at the recent history between the two, that they do take care of business against Sevilla, regardless of who's on the field, especially when they're at the Camp Nou.
Well, Dan, I do have to put you on the hot seat, put you on the spot. What is your score prediction for the weekend?
I guess Sevilla. I would say, I think 2-1 is a safe bet, and I don't like to hedge my bets and give score predictions, because, again, I think it all matters of how the game goes down. But it seems like Messi will be playing in this one, so So that's why I go 2-1, because I think it's always a good guess and a good shout that Messi's going to score at the Camp Nou.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there. But Dan, it was a real pleasure talking to you. I really enjoyed our chat, even if it was short. I felt like it was really insightful. Thank you for giving us on Love Sport a little bit of your time. A real pleasure. Dan Hilton there from the Barcelona podcast. Well, this was the El Clasico Real Madrid and Barcelona fan show on Love Sport. And you can join in and you can catch us every Friday, 10:30 to 11 on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.